Next step, number 721, March 31st, Cesar Chavez Day, 2022.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Remember that perennial question that came out of the 60s? War, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing was the answer. It was a song by Edwin Starr.
War! Who? Yeah!
What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing!
Ah, yes, how can you forget it? It's being played all the time whenever conflicts come out, and it's like a popular answer. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Yeah, it's a good one to believe, right? What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Except, look what's going on. Look what's going on. It's getting the attention of everybody, right? It is the top item. Until what happens? Another war comes along. Oh, no. I'm not talking about the ones with bullets and about firings. I'm talking about that slap that didn't seem to go away for a couple days, right? What happened during the Oscars, and like this is like such a big deal, you know, during the Oscars, you had Will Smith get up and slap Chris Rock for making a joke. And probably a lot of people were like saying, yeah, good for him that he did it, right? What is it good for? Yeah, well, it puts people in places, puts people where they should be. There is a purpose to war. Yes, I want to say it's good for absolutely nothing. It's nice, it's cliche, but we're seeing out on the world stage what we've been trying to do for several years is really absolutely nothing. When I've been sharing with you that we need to find a new metaphor, we need to find ways of solving for peace rather than perpetuating war, what are we seeing? More and more war gets people's attention. Violence gets people's attention. And there it was. There it was on the world stage. The war is taking place, the Ukraine's, and all of a sudden we took a little breather because we had an actor get up and slap a comedian, and people now were focusing on this. But you know who were really smart about it, right? There were tweeters who came out and they started tweeting. They started referencing the Will Smith slap and getting your attention on that tweet, they brought in their stories. Ah, that was kind of smart. Maybe like what I'm doing right now. Well, yeah, right? I mean, we've got this event that's on the world stage getting everybody's attention. Okay, can I grab you for that? It's just called smart marketing, right? Let me grab you while you're tuned in. Okay, so Will Smith slaps Chris Rock. What happened just a minute after that? Chris Rock went on to give the award. Did you catch that? Yeah, I don't think anybody caught that one. How about that one? He gave it to Amir Thompson and four white guys. That's what he said. Amir Thompson and four white guys. What? Like, you know, this is like bizarre. It's just like playing out on the world stage. Everybody's focusing in on Will Smith all of a sudden, who's like taken over the news channels and the news cycles from this horrendous activity that's taking place in the Ukraine. Not people getting slapped around, getting killed, getting bombed. But no, we're focusing in on this. And nobody paid attention to this racist remark, you know. The award goes to Amir Thompson and four white guys. What? four white guys? Like who can get away with that? Well, Chris Rock can, right? He got away with it. And if you say something, then you start coming off like, well, what's wrong with you? Why are you noticing it? I'm noticing it because we were brought up with this idea that we were supposed to look at a society based not on the color of their skin, but on the content of their character. But completely, that dream is now over. That dream is over. We are looking at people and the color of their skin. Made a big, big production out of it, including the Academy Award production, which was done all by black staff, and they were looking forward to celebrating it, and then all of a sudden it came down to this. I'm going to put a link on today's show notes to this really great article that was written by, of all people, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Yes, the same one of basketball notoriety. Yes, he wrote, Will Smith did a bad, bad thing. And this is it's an interesting piece. I mean, he goes into a lot of things here, but this is the one little key that I just loved. He writes, Hollywood award shows are traditionally a venue where what much worse things have been said about celebrities. As a means, listen to this, as a means of downplaying the fact that it's basically a gathering of multimillionaires giving each other rewards to boost business so they can make even more money. Whoa! I mean, this is it, right? I mean, people are focused in, oh, the Oscars. Meanwhile, people are getting killed, and not only in Ukraine, throughout the world. I mean, Ukraine took our attention off of what's going on in Central America, in Africa, the same problems that were going on in Syria and the rest of the world. And that's why when I come on and I try to talk about this issue of peace, about finding these new metaphors, I want to transcend the political. You know, my dear friend who we lost just a few months ago, Gabriel Staring, he came up with this beautiful phrase that was often quoted, humanity before politics. In other words, at what point do we start being human and forgetting about these, you know, these politicians, they're the same things. They're one is no different than the other when it comes down to it. At what point do we start saying these are human beings that are being fired upon? These are human beings. They're not Ukrainians. They're human beings. Oh, man, last week I went over to the Ukrainian church. And, you know, you're talking over there. We're praying together. At what point do we break down these boundaries? And this is a tough one for us, too, because when we come to the table, we're coming as Armenian, which is an ethnic identity. And so I go through all this pain of creating this idea of armodoxy. What is that armodoxy? Well, it's taking in and it's the melding of that ethnic identity with the values, the virtues that come to us from Christian expression from the apostolic time. Not of violence, but one of overcoming evil with that good. And challenging ourselves. Okay, if we really believe this Christian message, can we put it into practice? Is it true that love is more powerful than hate? Then let's do it. Let's practice it. What does that mean? And so in Armodoxy, we're able to see a model for it, how it works, how it comes about. And so here we are with some information about, you know, how it worked. How it has worked in the past. That yes, you can overcome evil with good. But again, short-term memory. Here we are on the world stage. Can you believe it's 2022 is the year? And this is how we're solving situations, by slapping people or beating up people or killing people. You see, it's the same model. It's the same model of returning evil with more evil. And that's the model that we have to reject. In other words, who are we killing? Who are we bombing? This last 4 or 5 weeks, I've been talking about it on The Next Step. And if you look at it, if you go back to the first one that I did right after the war broke, I mean, it is a natural progression, even including that very basic question, who would Jesus bomb? Like, what do you think? That Jesus is standing up there and saying, well, the Russians are bad? The Ukrainians are bad? They're all his children. And now can we start looking at people with those same Jesus eyes? Can we look at the world with Jesus' eyes? In other words, place yourself inside of Jesus' head and look at the people and see, hey, this is a brother of mine. This is a sister of mine. I mean, they show us these images coming out of Ukraine of people landing in Poland and these children and these mothers holding their children. And they say the Ukrainians have, no, they're not Ukrainians, they're people. When you start looking at them as people, then you start seeing your mother, you see your father, you see your grandmother, your grandfather, you see your children. And you realize that this is our only hope for us to start talking about people as people. Yes, as Gabriel said, you know, humanity before politics. As John Lennon said, imagine no countries. Wow, imagine. You know, when I bring up these things, in the past I've gotten people who've been angered, like, how dare you bring up John Lennon? It was interesting because this week I was thinking about it as, you know, when you read the Bible, and this will probably infuriate even more people now. When you read the Bible, you've got these prophets who are speaking out to the times, not about future events. They're speaking to the times. And they did upset the people of the time. They came out with ideas that were not accepted by the people. They were not accepted, but they were called prophets because they were speaking to the times. When John Lennon was talking, when he created Imagine, what is this, like 30 years, 25 years after World War II had ended, Vietnam was taking place, we're still resolving situations with more and more violence, and he came down to this very prophetic statement, imagine there's no countries, imagine there's no religion, imagine there's nothing to live and die for. Wow. And I love that because this live and die is a theme that comes out over and over in Christianity. But even more, you hear it about martyrdom. Christianity makes a big issue, and not only Christianity. I mean, you hear this in Islam as well. You hear it in Judaism about the martyrdom, about dying for your faith. That's horrible that you have to die for something you believe in. But here's something that we've got to add to that dialogue. And that's living for your faith. How many of us live for our faith? In other words, take the tenets that we hold so dear to our heart and really live. The story of the Good Samaritan. Why isn't that being taught more often? Why isn't the golden rule something that we pattern our lives with? Treat others the way you would want them to treat you. How simple is that? Do you want somebody bombing you? Then don't bomb somebody else. Wow. It's not brain surgery, right? It's so simple. It's so simple. Maybe that's the problem. In this simplistic look at it, you have to refute the element of politics. It just hurts me that, you know, in a couple weeks, it's going to be April 24th, and so many Armenians from the ethnic clan of Armenians come up and they start talking about this event that took place in 107 years ago. And it's kind of interesting that we've taken it and we've made it into the event of defining Armenianness, so that people look at Armenians and they understand genocide. Wow, that's pretty powerful. Like, as if we have gone through, we understand that genocide. If we did understand genocide as Armenians, we would be out there in the middle of every protest. We'd be out there in the middle of every humanitarian effort possible to aid people. Yeah, if we understood it. But we take this cheap route of going out and yelling and offering up slogans, you know, putting it on your Facebook page, right? On your Instagram, color yourself. Make a meme for yourself. Yeah, make something out of it, and it'll last for a little bit. It's no different than what people do in the old, before the pre-digital of getting out there and going out once a year and saying, you know, this is how I define being Armenian. It's no different than people who wake up Easter morning and saying, it's Easter. You know, the bunny rabbit gave me some eggs. Now let me go to church and do my obligation. And when you find out that church starts at 10 o'clock, you have no problem showing up at 12, because it's not a matter of going to a mass. It's not a matter of going to a service. It's a matter of showing up and doing your obligation and defining yourself. Today, yes, I will show that I'm a Christian. It is Easter morning. We look nice. We're shaved. We're clean. And let's go to church. Without any further further thought to what am I doing here? I'm not the first one to point this out, by the way. This is, it goes back to, I think, who was it? It was either Paul Tillich or it was one of the big Protestant theologians back in the last century who spoke about cheap grace. Bonhoeffer, it was Bonhoeffer, right? Yeah, cheap grace. In other words, yeah, Jesus has died for us. That's it. Jesus has died for us. Okay, so I go to heaven, right? It's just very cheaply done. I don't need to invest anything in it. Yeah, you got to have a friend named Jesus so that when you die, he's going to recommend you to the spirit in the sky. Oh, I love that song. Yeah, I know. I do love that song. It's a catchy tune too, right? It's actually my ringer on my phone. I love it. The spirit in the sky. Which, well, one day I'll tell you about it. It came off during a funeral service, which was a whole other story. But I digress, as I often do. What does it mean to live for your faith? It means to look at the world through Jesus' eyes. It means looking at people and saying, yes, this too is my brother. This too is my sister. This too is my child. This too is my parent. And realizing that, you know, this is the only way. This is the only way that we can make it. That movie several years ago, War Games, I've got to watch it. I haven't seen that in years, but there was that very distinct moment when they're asking the computer, you know, they're in the middle of this threat of nuclear annihilation. Because the only way that you can overcome it, or the only way that you can answer back a nuclear attack, is with your nuclear attack. So there was mutual destruction was the name of the game. So that if the two superpowers at that time, two superpowers, now of course nuclear weapons are in everyone's arsenal, but at that time there were two superpowers. One was the Soviet Union, one was the United States, that if Moscow were to launch a nuclear attack against the United States, let's suppose Washington, D.C., the missile is coming, America has only one option, is to press the button and make sure that there is a nuclear attack going to Moscow, so that the threat of mutual annihilation will prevent you from pushing that button. So in the first place. And so in this War Games, if I remember right, it was like, okay, they're playing these games out and now it's become real because the machine has actually taken over. The computers have seen a launch and so now they have to answer it. And there's this question that comes up. Can we win the game? And the machine answers very straightforward. The only way to win it is not to play it. The only way to win a war is not to fight the war, not to play the game, not to go to war. Think about that for a moment. Yeah, the implications. What does it mean? It means to live for your faith. When we come back after the song, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you two things. I took a trip over to the Ukrainian Orthodox Church in Hollywood. Actually, it's a section of town in Los Angeles called Little Armenia. So that in itself was beautiful. Secondly, I want to talk about the Pope Francis. What he did last Friday is he consecrated Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. What does that mean? And why specifically last Friday? Okay, when we come back, okay? Every week I pick a song, something for us to just contemplate where we're at in life. Also give us a moment to think about what was said. This is my pick for this week.
He's 5 foot two and he's 6 feet four. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Lobau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me, and brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end.
The Universal Soldier by Donovan. The song was originally written by Buffy St. Marie, but Donovan recorded this in 1965. And I thought it was just kind of important that we start bringing back some of this music from the protest era, anti-war songs, anti-war sentiments, anti-war statements, because we're just accepting war as the only solution. You know, it's like violence escalates and it becomes war. Like, you know, if you're a little bit naive, you can think like, okay, why don't the world leaders just sit down and negotiate? How about if they played a game of chess? But what happens when somebody loses that chess game? Well, they might bring some muscle men. And what if your muscle men are more powerful than theirs? And then you might bring in a little army and then another army. And you see how things escalate. Because this is the system that we're used to. You know, it's like once you're used to it, it's difficult to think outside of the box. It's difficult to think of other systems of conflict resolution. And this is why it's very important for us to be able to be that voice out there and not say this is the only way. You know, in the Armenian church, we have this really, really tragic situation in that we have the same identical church with two heads. You know, it's like impossible, but it's possible. We have a situation right now where there are two Catholicoses, which is an old situation. It's a historical reality, but the part that isn't a reality is that those Catholicoi, that's plural, that's a classy way of pluralizing the Catholicos noun. Historically, we've had even three or four Catholicoi at one time, but each of them had jurisdictions. In this case, we've got the same jurisdictions being ruled by two different Catholicoi. And in English language, thankfully, thank God, the English language has a distinction between diocese and prelacy, but in Armenian, we don't have that distinction. So it's Tem is the diocese, and Arachnortutyun would be the leadership, or which translates then into primate. And but like in English, they've got prelate and primate. And these are just superficial. These are coverings to a horrendous problem, which began like in the 1930s with the assassination of an archbishop, politics entering into the church, finding a way of getting out, the CIA. Yeah, CIA, everything. I mean, this is really, really big. But here's what I'm getting at right now. Why am I bringing up this? Because now we are accepting it. We have accepted, yes, we've accepted that there are two heads to the church. And the common thing is, like you say something like there's, and they say, well, that's okay, they're people too. No one's questioning whether they're people. Well, that's okay, you know, they're Christian too. No one is questioning whether they are Christian or not. Well, okay, they're Armenian. No one's questioning that. The question is, what is the rule and regulation? And why was it there? The rule and regulation says that in one geography, you have one bishop. And if you think about it, the entire Christian church has gone against that. Because in one geography, let's say, for instance, in my town here, Los Angeles, we have a Roman Catholic bishop. We have an Armenian bishop. We have a Greek bishop, and so on and so on. So technically, if you are one Christian church, and the prayer that Jesus Christ prayed that about his disciples, about his apostles, let them be one, as you and I are one, talking to the Father. But we have found all kinds of ways to divide ourselves instead of adhering to the main program, which was to be one. And because we've now just accepted that this is the reality. There are two heads. Yeah, impossible. Like, there's no other entity that has two heads, right? But the church has two heads, you know, for the Armenian church. And we've accepted this. And so we now are in a complacent area where we say, okay, this is the reality. Let's deal with it. And we have all kinds of ways of covering that up by making name, by assigning names, like I said, prelate and primate and diocese and prelacies, when in reality it is wrong. It is plain wrong. And it is just absolutely against the canons of the church. But when you don't play by the rules, who cares, right? And it's the same thing when it comes down to war. We've looked at war and we've said, this is the way you resolve it. Don't worry about it. There is a solution at the end. We can resolve it by war. So don't worry about your negotiations, about your diplomacy, about talking or about arm wrestling or about playing a game of chess against your adversary. In the end, we can resolve it this way. And we know it works. And because we know that, we don't seek new avenues. We don't seek new metaphors for explaining differences in understanding. And so we're stuck with this. And so I thought it was really important that we start talking about some of the protest songs from the 60s, from the 70s. I wanted to share them with you. This, again, was called The Universal Soldier, Donovan.
My head won't deliver. Well, I'm so down the river, but I'm
this past week has been full of emotions. Today's cover is a picture of a rose that I took last Monday. A few days ago, yeah, Monday. It rained here in Southern California, and that's really phenomenal. You don't get too much rain here. And as I was looking out the window, I see this beautiful rose, and there are droplets of water that are beating up on its petals. Just so beautiful. And it really, really saddened me to look at that. Saddened me because I realized that we are on the point of extinction, of annihilation. And all of this beauty that God has placed on earth can be wiped out in a single moment. Because we are not playing by the rules of humanity, but by the rules of politics and war. And can we bring about a change? You know, I know Jesus did. Jesus brought about a major change, right? And people of the time were looking for a political hero. But he said, no. He says, mine is not about this kingdom of this world. But it's to look out at the world and see that there is something beyond the politics that you guys are playing. There is no such thing as chosen people, because you're all God's children. And every one of you can inherit the kingdom. Every one of you. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter what kind of money you make or don't make. But to you belongs the kingdom of heaven. And it's there. It's an opportunity for you to be in there. For you to be a part of that. And so I look at this rose and I just overwhelmed with emotions. Yes, it's the same rose that's on the cover of today's show. You know, took a picture of it. I just couldn't. I was just overcome by those droplets of water and all it signified. All it could mean, what it means to all of us out there. And just a few days earlier, well, let me back up. I was given an invitation by one of our workers at the diocese, Diran Avakian. He's in charge of a lot of the outreach that the diocese does, especially in Armenia. And he told me that there was a Ukrainian church and he was friends with the pastor there. They were both working together in a hospital as chaplain. And yeah, Armenian. We have Armenian chaplains in hospitals here. Yeah, so Diran said, would you like to go to his church and let's say a prayer together? And I jumped at the opportunity, yes, to go to a Ukrainian church to stand in solidarity with them. And it was an easy one for me because we had an inn here. Diran was working with the pastor over there. And so we planned to go Saturday, to go to this place, this church called the Ukrainian Catholic Church. And I assumed that it was a Roman Catholic church until I walked in and I saw the iconostan. And it was kind of like different for me, Roman Catholic, and then having the iconostat. But you know where my head went? It went right to the Armenian Catholics, the way that they have taken everything that we have in the Armenian church, including the liturgy, but the form and the structure, even the curtains, and have used that to bring about the Catholic Mass. And here in Los Angeles, it's even more pronounced. They've even taken the name of the Armenian, patron saint of the Armenian church, Saint Gregory the Illuminator. Yes, the Roman Catholic Church that ministers to the Armenian people here in Southern California is Saint Gregory Armenian Catholic Church. Yeah. Okay, you talk about ways of getting people, ways of attracting people. Well, they've found a few ways, right? You do the same service. You intersperse, instead of the Catholicos, we remember the Pope. Instead of the primate, we will remember the cardinal who resides in this area, and so on and so on. Okay. Anyway, that's a discussion that we've had in the past. So when I walked into this Ukrainian church, I thought maybe this was something that was taking place. And the priest was really quick to correct me and to share with me what the story is, that, you know, the Pope Francis is looked at one among several, and first among equals. I can't remember if he used that terminology, but he said that he was one, which is the way the Armenian Church looks at it too. Yes, Pope Francis is the Bishop of Rome, just as Catholicos Karakin is also the Bishop of the Araradian Diocese, the Araradian Plain. Okay, so and all the other bishops, all the other Catholicoi, all the other patriarchs, they are designated by regions, right? And so we understand this. We've got this down. So we went to this Ukrainian church and we looked at the iconostats and we saw the name that it said Catholic, and the priest there explained that yes, there is a reverence toward the Catholic Church, but they were not under Rome, but they were autocephalous with their own patriarch. But he was adamant about sharing with us that quite different from the Russian Orthodox Church. And that's something that we had talked about a few episodes ago, and definitely a few years ago, when there was that big split between the Ukrainian and the Russian churches. And it is something that you really do feel when you go into this church, because there among the icons are not only the traditional Christian icons of the apostles and the early saints, such as Saint Paul, the apostle to the Gentiles, but also the ethnic saints, very similar to what we have in the Armenian church. You would walk into an Armenian church and you'd see people like Vartan, or you would see Saint Ashot, possibly, and that's one of my favorites, right? Saint Gayaner, Epsime, Sahag, Mesrob. I mean, these are known as the ethnic saints. Yes, they are people like Datevatsi and Naregatsi are now being found in the Western world. But for all intents and purposes, they are part of the Armenian canonical saints. And although there is an argument that if they were before the major splits, they are recognized by all the churches, but let's say they are revered more, they are understood more, because they also play a place in Armenian national identity and history. Okay, so there in that church you saw these Ukrainian saints, and very, very similar iconography images that we would see in the Armenian and in other Eastern traditions. Now, before going to this church, I had heard the day before, I had read on my Catholic feeds that Pope Francis had consecrated Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And this was kind of like a wild idea. It goes back to what we were talking about. If Jesus asks us to pray for our enemies, then do we pray for people that are persecuting us as well? Well, yes, in the Christian message, that's what Jesus asks us. Now, we went to this Ukrainian church with no intention of praying for the Russians, but it was in my head, not only because of the words of Christ, but it was more pertinent that day because I had just read this article that Pope Francis had done a Christian thing. Wow, yeah. He had prayed for the Russians and the Ukrainians and consecrated them to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Now, the timing on this, of course, it took place last Friday. If you look at the date, it is exactly to the day, 9 months before Christmas, December 25th, is March 25th. That's the Feast of Annunciation, the day that the announcement was made to Saint Mary that she is with child. She will bear, in other words, the date of inception. 9 months. Because if it's a perfect birth, it's exactly 9 months, right? In Armenian, our date comes on April 7th, exactly 9 months before January 6th. Okay, so ours is just off by 12 days, or theirs is off by 12 days, whichever way you want to look at it. But even more than the date, what was interesting is what's going on? What does this mean? Consecrating, that's a powerful word. And so I read about it, and I want to share this with you. Pope Francis on Friday consecrated Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart of Mary with a prayer asking for peace in the world. At the end of the penitential service at St. Peter's Basilica on March 25th, the Pope carried out the act saying, Mother of God and our Mother, to your Immaculate Heart, we solemnly entrust and consecrate ourselves, the Church and all humanity, especially Russia and Ukraine. Accept this act that we carry out with confidence and love. Grant that war may end and peace spread throughout the world. Very powerful. Very powerful. But he goes on. Let me continue reading. Seated before a statue of Our Lady of Fatima from a shrine in the central Italy, the Pope Francis said, The people of Ukraine and Russia, who venerate you with great love, now turn to you. Even as your heart beats with compassion for them and for all those peoples disseminated by war, hunger, injustice, and poverty. Through your intercession, may God's mercy be poured out on the earth and the gentle rhythm of peace return to mark our days. I was very, very moved by this, as I think most anybody who listens to it, who hears it, and hears the head of the Roman Catholic Church offering this prayer, consecrating these countries, consecrating people. But did you get the tone of it in his message? The tone was about brotherhood, about understanding people as people. It's that step beyond the politics. You know, the politicians are going to do their stuff. We have to rise above that if we're going to save that flower, if we're going to save that droplet on that flower. We have to look for different solutions. And so it was with this that I went, powered by this, that I went to that Ukrainian church. And there we prayed. We offered a prayer. We sang, Dead Vold, may our Lord have mercy. There's, I think, maybe 10 of us coming from the Armenian church. And then what was kind of interesting was afterwards, the comments that we got. There was a couple that were written on social media there, but I kind of heard it from people too. Like, how could you go there? What? How could I go to a church? Yeah, yeah. How could you go to a Ukrainian church? Because the Ukrainians were assisting the Azeris against the Armenians. Yeah, we all knew that. We knew that going into it. But what do I do? What do I do? And this is the dilemma that I'm going to throw out to you. And I'm just asking you to walk in my shoes. I'm asking you to think about this and to ask yourself, what would you do? If you stay away, what have you done? If you harbor animosity, what have you done? If you kindle hatred, what have you done? And what can you do? If you keep talking the same dialogue of hatred, at what point does it shift? And is there a possibility for peace and love? At some point, somebody needs to break the cycle. Yes, it's horrible that Ukraine did not stand with the Armenian people. But that's a government. That's a government not standing. Do you think that if we went and asked the people what they were thinking about, just as if you asked the people today to look out at what's going on in Ukraine? Possibly, possibly. I'm not going to presuppose anything. But at what point do we start saying to ourselves that this is not about Ukraine? Those people, are human beings. They're children. They're somebody's mother, somebody's father, somebody's child, somebody's parent, somebody's brother, somebody's sister. And I know this is emotional. This is very, very emotional. It's very difficult for me. It's difficult for me because I know backgrounds when you know the history. But that in that difficulty, we have to rise to the occasion. And the only simple question is, who would Jesus bomb? What would Jesus do? And when somebody asked me, how could you go into the Ukrainian church? I responded to that particular person. I said, and how could I not go? Where would Jesus go? Where would Jesus go today? Where would he walk? It's a difficult one because it's wrapped up with so much ethnic pride. And this is a big one. I shared with you earlier that it's a lot of baggage that comes in. It's something that you need to be proud of, not in the sense... We have two separate words in the Armenian language. There's habardutyun, which is that pride that we feel that, look at me, I'm thinking... And then there is badiv, which also gets translated to pride, but it's more of like that dignity, the dignity of understanding of who you are as a person. And the better you are as an individual who understands your background, who understands your identity, the better you are as a human being in this world. And so there's trade-offs. There's trade-offs. And so today I'm putting it all out there. You know, take a look. What are the questions that you're asking as you're looking out? I know people were offended that I went to a Ukrainian church. I was offended that people could not see that we had to go there. And somebody asked this straight out, did you go to a Russian church? No, I didn't. I didn't go into a Russian church. If there's an opportunity today, maybe I would. It's not about going to a Ukrainian church or a Russian church. It's about standing with people who have seen pain because you have seen pain. You know, people, they came up to me and they said, where is the world? Was the world 2 years ago when things were going down in Armenia? How come there weren't? Well, where were you when things were going down in Rwanda? Where were you when things were going down in Darfur? Where were you? And at this moment in history, you have a way of answering that. Where was I when things were going down in Ukraine? Where was I standing? By the sidelines? Or was I there to say, I'll stand with you? Was I there to extend myself, to support you in your grief and in your hurting? Because I am here, and you are here, for no other reason than at some point somebody stood up for you. I'm not just talking about the Armenian experience. Go look at your history. Very few people come into being without a struggle. At some point, somebody struggled. Somebody got killed. Somebody laid down a life. Somebody gave of themselves so that you can be here. And the only way that this is going to work is when we start paying, not back, but paying it forward. And we have that opportunity right now. I throw this out to you. Process it. I'd love to hear from you. It was a very difficult week for me. And the only thing that kept me going was not the applause that we got from the Academy Awards, but was looking at the images that came out of Ukraine and saying that, you know, what difficulty do I have? That I can't process these thoughts? Big deal. There's people who are suffering, and it's up to us to reach out. Can I reach out by standing in solidarity? Can I reach out with prayer? Can I reach out by making that prayer a means that leads to my action in this world? I walk in the shoes of others. Let's take a break right now. Here's Susie. When I come back, I'll share with you what's going to happen this weekend. Kind of an interesting one for me. Here's Susie.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vosgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. Thank you, all of our listeners, for the warm expressions that you send me, for your concerns, for the prayer requests. We've been getting a lot of prayer requests. Know that I honor every prayer request, and I keep you in my prayers, even when you don't ask. You know, those of you who have been on the Next Step, your supporters, you are always in my prayers. I keep you. And I thank God for the beauty that you bring into this world. You allow me to come into your lives. You allow me to share these issues with you. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate your kind words. And mostly I appreciate your prayers. This weekend, I'm going to be up in Dunlap, California. I'm going to be at the Western Diocese Summer Camp, even though it is spring right now. We're going to be hosting a juniors retreat, young people getting together. And I'm going to put on my young thinking cap. Okay, actually, I'm going for a couple reasons. Opportunity, well, they've asked me to be the retreat master. I'd love to do that. But also just to get an idea of where kids are these days, just to find out what they're into. It's been a while. It's been, let's see, 5 or 6 years that I've stepped out of the youth ministries. So it's important that I get back into understanding where their head is at, because we do so much programming. We're going to be starting a new program. Hopefully this weekend it'll launch, but I have a feeling it might be a little bit longer than that. But we are recording tomorrow. It's a new TikTok series. And don't ask me how that's going to all come out, but I do have a wonderful team that's putting it together. And we're going to be recording. And hopefully next week on the Next Step, I'll be able to share that with you. That brings us to the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Do look us up on inhisshoes.org. Do send us email at epostle.net. feedback@epostle.net. That's apostle with an E. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. On behalf of my wonderful producer, Susie, and myself, this is Father Vosgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are. Bye.